You are now listening to the Cinnamon and Sugar Podcast featuring D'Angelo Williams and Gary Barnage. You push play and they'll push the limits.
It's your boy Tom here and we are back with another episode of the Cinnamon and Sugar Podcast. Ooh, Gary slipping today. He was late. Didn't take his headphones off for the intro. I'm thinking your world is turned upside down right now for some reason.
Well, it tells me that you don't have the kids around because you got really loud on that one. Usually it's your boy time trying to keep it quiet over there.
Yeah, I'm probably in trouble right now because the kids are here. They're just asleep.
That's
funny. So, first of all, can I ask you this? Gary,
you can ask anything.
Have you heard of the tale of somebody going back to back? They're going back to back. I'm talking about the Uno champion, Mrs. Williams, going back to back. What does that have to say? What kind of effect does that have on our boy D'Angelo? You have any advice for him?
Before he answers, I will give him a little out. He was not there to try and dethrone. So he was not there in person. He was with me. I had kidnapped him. So he was not able to put his best foot forward. But with that being said, it doesn't happen very often that somebody wins back to back. I think, what is this, the second or third time this has ever happened? And it just happens to be D's wife has it happen, and he gets to live that for two straight weeks. He better hope she don't win it for the third time, because if he does, we might as well just retire the belt because there's nobody dethroning her.
Okay, so here's the thing. She's done it twice, back-to-back, twice. Nobody in the league has done that. Kudos to her. I'd have to give her her props where it's due. Also, at the same time, I'd have to say that I'm pretty sure I'm the only one with three wins that had 9+ people at the table every time we played. Not quite sure what the numbers would add up to. I'm not making excuses or anything like that. Again, you know, I respect the champ. I respect the decisions that she made on becoming the champ. I respect her card play and all that. I have to, because it brought her a championship goal. But at the same time, I am the greatest Uno player, dead or alive. That's me. It gets no better than me. And what you have to understand, if Jordan can lose finals, if LeBron James can lose finals, if your favorite person to play in a game can lose finals and not make it to the Super Bowl and still be considered the greatest, then I can be considered the greatest without having to prove to everyone that I have to win week to week. I just got to win enough and consistently enough. Bro, I mean, you're looking at the greatest, man. I really feel like when y'all talk to me, y'all should address me as Mr. Uno.
You can't be the greatest if you don't have the most title wins.
We do have to have one correction before our inbox gets flooded. Michael Jordan didn't lose in the finals. I already know. Somebody out there listening, Standard.
He did not lose in the final.
It's going crazy, the fact that you said that. Yeah. So,
6. No.
But you get what I'm saying. There was times where he didn't make it.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I got that. I got that.
You get what I'm saying? Like,
but no credit to his own. He did everything he could. When you're averaging 42 points a game and you don't make the and you can't get past it, that means your team's terrible.
Hold on. Are you really going to you getting worse than Tom now, Gary, with Michael Jordan?
Jordan's the greatest, that's all.
You didn't have to. You standing with his numbers.
I'm just giving
but you just said also that you can't be the greatest if you don't have the most titles.
Uno is a solo event. It'd be the same thing with golf. The greatest is the person who has the most wins, and I believe the most wins is Jack Nicklaus and Tiger Woods, one of those two. So I would say he is the greatest. Tiger Woods is number two. Tiger Woods is the greatest in our generation. But in a solo sport, it comes down to wins. And Uno is a solo sport. Just like tennis is a solo sport. If you have the most wins, it makes you the best player of all time, because only you can get those victories. You're not relying on anything else.
But okay, so you
team sports are different.
Usain Bolt is regarded as the fastest sprinter ever to live, but even he got beat.
He has the most. He has the most gold medals of a sprinter, though, in his sports.
But he was also the fastest. If I was to put up the fastest,
Here's my question: is like, do you not take competition into account? So, like, if you won Uno, but you were playing against five other players, whereas D, like he said, got multiple wins and had a full table. Don't you think that's a little different?
No, because you can't affect, like, you can't worry about other people. They made the rule that as long as four people show up, the belt gets defended. Doesn't matter. They made that rule. They didn't say it had to be a full table. So that was the rule that was put in place. You can only go by people don't show up. There's nothing you can do.
It's five, Gary, but I can't saying.
If nobody shows up, that's not your fault they didn't want to show up. They just didn't want to get beat that week. That's all it means.
I think some wins are cheaper than others. That's all I'm saying. Like, I don't know.
If you want to go into individual sport, hold on, I got you.
Of getting a cheap one.
I had six people on mine. I had six in mine, not five. I had six. There were six people. you were also there for mine.
Yes.
And Reese was there for mine. So the two most recent, the three of the last four champions were all at that I beat. Four of those champions, the last four champions were all at that table. Just saying. but if you can't say cheapen because, okay, say in tennis, Venus Williams is in the finals and the best player was Serena. Well, Serena loses in the round before, but she is literally the best, second best player in the tournament, but she has a bad game and loses. And she goes against number 18th ranked in the world and beats her. That's not a cheap win. It's not her fault the competition didn't lead up to the standard that you expect.
That you have to play who's in front of you, but I feel like there are wins that are just like the Toronto Raptors when they won the NBA Finals when KD got hurt. And who else? Somebody else got hurt. And it was just like they were playing a shell of that Warriors team. That is a cheap.
I agree with him on that, Gary.
But that's team sports. Team sports are different than individual. That's what I'm saying. Individual, you can only worry about yourself. You can't worry about anything else. Team, you need a team to win.
So if Serena went out because of injury and that's why she didn't get to advance, then is it a cheap win?
No, because they still had to play the other people in the tournament.
I don't know. I think you can leave room for judgment on some of those, but
somebody who's wrong.
I got a question for y'all, man. And we normally don't cover this on our podcast, but we're gonna cover it tonight.
I hope it's what I think it is.
It has everything to do with P. Diddy and Meek Mills right now.
That's not.
Yeah, P. Diddy and Meek Mills. Okay, Here's the problem that I have with this whole situation. So the thing
for our audience that's less seasoned, can you tell them what's going on with P. Diddy and Meek Mill? Can you give them a little rundown of behind the scenes?
You probably can do it better than I can because we're appealing to your crowd anyway.
What is my crowd?
The ones that have just got off from work, man, and like want to hear a good podcast.
I just feel like as a fellow person in the Illuminati, I feel like it's better if you break down these Illuminati parties and what happens at them.
So what it is, I don't know exactly what it is. I'm going to tell you what's been reported. It's been reported that P. Diddy and Meek Mills had more than an ideal friendship. It went more than that. And that P. Diddy
was clapping them cheeks.
Yes, yes. But here's the thing, though. And I hadn't seen any of the videos or anything like that. But I kind of have a problem with it, but then I don't, because I don't know what the truth is. But I do know that if people didn't know me and my core friends, they could probably think the same thing about me.
Why?
Well, yeah, boy, what does that mean?
Well, so, like, we're like frat boys when we're together. Like, and so as a result of us being frat boys, and that
are you telling us that moment, are you telling us you've clapped somebody's cheeks?
No.
A male I'm in the locker room. I don't see how we're drawing parallels here, D. I'm just saying.
There's no proof that P. Diddy clapped that man's cheeks, though. That's what I'm trying to get you to
understand. There's some suspect things in the ether, but I hear what you're saying. You're saying if somebody caught a bad moment that you might could take something the wrong way.
Yes. I mean, not in the moments that we've seen them in. Like, now, some of them I'm just like, I don't know. But, I mean, just it depends on, like, your – like, because most people is the first impression, and that's the only impression, as opposed to getting to know the relationship.
I'm not tracking. maybe Gary can help us out. Everybody knows that would be your butt buddy if you had one. So what?
I think the thing is, like, with all the stuff going on with them.
Gary, no. You don't supposed to talk after he says that.
Oh, I don't worry about false rumors. The problem with all that stuff is some of that stuff has came out where, let's be real, there's so many things that have been said that with AI has mimicked things and done things. Like, we don't truly know. That's the bad thing about AI right now, is we don't know what's true, what's not. Because they released this whole AI of Taylor Swift photos. They released a whole AI of this other girl in a video that was not actually them. And so, you know, who knows how good this stuff could be? Like, some of the stuff could be doctored. Could it be true? Yes. Could it not be true? Yes. The thing is, you're never really going to truly know unless you catch the smoking gun. A lot of silence over there.
Yeah, well, I'm silent because I'm thinking about this, Gary, because I've been. Why do we care?
I don't care.
That's what I'm saying. Why does the world care, Tom? That
because of who it is,
even a thing. But why does it matter, though? Even if he was to come out,
well,
and say,
okay, yeah, I think the P. Diddy is the part. You know, if it was Meek Mill with someone else, but I think it's just P. Diddy because he's already caught up in these other allegations that are going on right now, and he's kind of an iconic figure in the 90s and early 2000s. But yeah, so I think it's because it's P. Diddy and all this stuff is starting to unravel. Obviously, Meek Mill's, you know, he's big, but I think it's because you have somebody like P. Diddy attached to us was making it a little bit bigger. Not that we should care, but that's why people care, because people.
Well, I think it gives more credence to maybe some of the stuff that was being said about P. Diddy is true if some of these things turn out to be true. But again, it could also be the opposite. People were only throwing P. Diddy's name in it because he was already accused of other stuff. So they're just trying to link it all together.
This is why I have a problem with it, man. And the only reason why I brought it up, because if there's nothing there and these guys were really good friends, you just broke that friendship up. Like, I can't even go hang out with them anymore, because every picture that's taken from that point on is going to be taken from the perspective of, oh, this right here is going on. Like, so we literally, as a whole, have ripped the friendship completely up.
Yeah.
That's the only reason why I brought it up. So that's why I was like, why does it matter whether he is or not? Like, do we not care about this friendship? Like, what if they was lovers and they loved each other and y'all just screwed it up? But then y'all watch Bridgerton all episodes and start crying because the Duke don't get, because he made a, you see what I'm saying?
Gary? I haven't seen the movie. I haven't seen Bridgerton, so I have no idea what that reference is.
But that's what I'm saying, though. Like, it's crazy because you can have a real life Bridgerton by just minding your own damn business.
Yeah, no, I agree. Time just really cared about it. That's why he brought it up.
I didn't bring it up. D'Angelo brought it up.
He did, actually. Yeah. He did. It is true.
I did.
So,
I did. I'm gonna let Tom take over. Go ahead, Tom.
Well, I used the word iconic in my description of P. Diddy, but to move on to a true icon and kind of get this podcast back on the rails of where we normally are, I wanted to get y'all's thoughts on Sting retiring. Do you think he's officially going to be out? Do you think he went out the right way? What's your overall thoughts on Sting's career? Where do you have him in your Mount Rushmore? Is he even on your Mount Rushmore? All that good stuff.
You want me to start or you want to start, D?
Okay, I totally disagree with telling people it's going to be your last match and then going out having the last match with the potential of having more matches after that. I would rather you have the match and that match be your last one. Like, you maybe get the mic after and say, hey, guys, I want to thank you. You're winning. That's more special to the crowd that was there. Not only is that more special to the crowd that was there, but like, it pays homage to all the real wrestling fans that decide to come out and even give a crap to even come out. When you say somebody last something, then that's when everybody want to pack the gym and the stadium, because it's cool to pack the gym and the stadium because we want to see his last hoorah, because we want to be the one to talk about it as opposed to being the ones that's just purely witnessing it. And I think that that's what we've gotten away from. So I'm glad that he's getting his flowers, but at the same time, I would rather him did it a different way.
I actually like the way he did it, because I think it got a chance for him to introduce have his kids come out with the different looks. It gave them time to get the footage together, even though WWE wouldn't give them the footage from WCW or any of his runs with that to use, but it gave them time to put all that stuff together and gave people the opportunity that wanted to be there to be a part of it. Because, like, there's some wrestlers that made sure they were there for that match. If they wouldn't have known it was last match, they wouldn't have been there. They wouldn't have known. They would never have done that. So I think that plays a big part of it.
So if that's the case, though, Gary, if that's the case, then why even come for his last match? You know that he ain't going to wrestle forever. You've seen him wrestle before. So now all of a sudden you want to come and steal a little limelight because this is his last match, Gary? Think about that, bro.
Well, I wouldn't say limelight, because, like, Ric Flair.
Thinking about that.
Ric Flair wanted to be there because Ric Flair and Sting had the iconic wrestling matches back in the WCW days. And
yeah, but he wouldn't. So let's just say he didn't say anything. He wouldn't have came and saw him wrestle. That's what I'm saying. Like, when I tag, it's my final thing. It lets everybody know, like, hey, you got to come out. You got to see this. If he'd have been like, hey, this is my last year, they wouldn't have picked this match to come to. Now you see what I'm saying?
Well, they did. They said that he had his last, like, basically 6 weeks. He's like, this is my 6 weeks. I'm retiring after this pay-per-view. So everybody knew this was his last run he was going to have, and then he was done at that pay-per-view. It wasn't just, this is my last match. They knew 6 weeks in advance, this is my farewell tour. I'm done after this.
You know, this kind of parallels our discussion about, if you found out you had a terminal illness, would you tell anybody because you wanted them to feel bad for you or be able to see you? You know, it's kind of like the same thing. It's like, do you not tell everybody you're retiring because you want, like D says, the real ones to show up? Or do you tell everybody because if it is your last match, people will be more inclined to come, you know, same way as if you are dying, inclined to come hang out with you if they know they're not going to be able to hang out with you.
Well, I think part of it also is Sting's trying to put AEW over too. He wants AEW to do well. He wants them to succeed because he's been there. They gave him a shot and they gave him a better run than what WWE did when he signed with WWE. WWE booked him to lose every match. They didn't even give him an opportunity to win matches. They just squashed him to Triple H and Seth Rollins. Like, they didn't do him justice, as we lost D's video. They didn't do him justice, and they didn't even give him the match that everybody in the freaking world wanted, was Sting versus Undertaker. And both Undertaker and both Sting wanted that match, and they would not give it to him. So I think WWE did a discredit to Sting's run. They and I think AEW did it the right way, and Sting retired as a champion, as a tag champion.
So when you say the right way, positive. they gave him somebody young to take all the big bumps.
And then he also can mentor Darby Allin. Darby Allin's part of the future of AEW.
Right.
So well, like,
if he,
I think
if he doesn't kill himself first,
he's going. But the thing is, that's never going to change, because if you know anything about Darby Allin, even him in his personal life, he is a daredevil. He does crazy, stupid things as well. That's just his mentality. So I think that blends over well to his character in wrestling. And I actually like what they did. I thought it was great to have the Young Bucks be the guy, because the Young Bucks can carry a match too. Even with Sting in there being 64 years old, the Young Bucks can make him look younger, because that's how good the Young Bucks are.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Did you see some of the bumps Sting took?
Yeah.
He took the flip into the glass. He took his Scorpion Death Drop. He took some bumps in that match at 64 years old.
Yeah. And that kind of brings me to my next question. Where do you guys have him all time? Does his late run in AEW move him up at all in your mind? Or do you more so base it on the height of his career?
I don't even think anything after WCW needs to be even brought up. Like, his WCW run was tremendous. From the bleach blonde hair into the Wolf Pack into the Crow style Sting. Like, that whole aspect, that whole demeanor, that was WCW's Undertaker. So it was iconic. Like, that's why he got the name the Icon.
I didn't like Sting until he started coming from the Raptors. I was like, man, that's like Russell Crowe. Because obviously everybody...
You mean the Crow, not Russell Crowe.
I mean the Crow. So it was one of those things where we were huge fans. So when he did come down and he had just had his run with NWO, and then he started beefing with him, Gary. And I was like, oh, this thing right here is like... no, he ain't taking shit. He coming in and he kicking people ass. And that's what I liked about Sting. And that's when he jumped on my radar. But again, it didn't move the needle for me at all as his AEW run.
I think if you want to talk about, I think he's a top 10 wrestler. I don't know if he's on the Mount Rushmore, because Mount Rushmore only has four. It's so hard to pick four wrestlers. But I think he's arguably in the top six. You could argue him in the top six, but he's definitely in the top 10 by far. But I would say you could argue him in the top six, maybe even top five, because he carried WCW. Even in the NWO days, when NWO was huge, their only protagonist was Sting. He was the only face contending against NWO. So, because even Goldberg ended up lost a streak to NWO. Sting was always that guiding light in that thing. So, like, he was the Undertaker of WCW, and Undertaker's iconic as well. So, like, Undertaker's probably on the Mount Rushmore with Shawn Michaels. I think there's two, and then I think you have Hogan, and then I know you don't like this time because The Rock, and I don't think Stone Cold make it, but I think Ric Flair is probably the fourth.
Oh my gosh, bro. I thought we were going to get through this without saying his name.
But
what do you see? This is a hot take, bro. I don't think I like Ric Flair's style of wrestling because he was so over the top. He oversold. And I don't like people that oversell.
Yes, but he also is regarded as having probably six of the top 10 best wrestling matches of all time. There's probably six of them with Ric Flair, with Sting, and with Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. It's probably four of those six. Like, that. The thing is, like, it's a different style of wrestling. Like, if you wanted to bring up, like, best characters, Ric Flair is probably not up there with The Rock and Stone Cold. Was The Rock and Stone Cold good wrestlers? No. They were entertaining characters.
Oh, Stone Cold was a good wrestler, right? I mean, everybody said he was one of the best technicians.
Bret Hart was better. Shawn Michaels is a better wrestler.
Before he got hurt, that was like his thing. That's why he was the ringmaster.
No, he was always good, but he was not considered great. Like, he was not like that level of wrestler. Like,
The Rock, I'm just saying, to lump him with The Rock is almost disrespectful, from my understanding of his technical ability. Yeah,
I was talking about character aspect.
Okay,
their characters, yes, huge. Like, you want to talk about wrestlers, Hulk Hogan's not a good wrestler, but Hulk Hogan is what brought WWE wrestling into the forefront. Basically, Hogan was the face that brought everything in. Well, so it automatically goes on that because there wouldn't be without Hogan.
And the disrespect that you did not say Roman Reigns first.
Greatest heel turn in all of wrestling.
Hulk Hogan. 100%.
Oh, yeah, going to NWO.
There's not even anything close to that.
I would say the closest thing to me was when the Giant joined the NWO. And that was just because I think, you know, you've kind of felt like, oh, here's the Giant. He's the only one that can stop the NWO. And I remember I stayed awake all night being so upset that the Giant turned to NWO. But even that's not even close to whenever Hogan joined.
See, I think, to me, the only one I think you could say is close is when, like, Stone Cold joined Vince McMahon. Because, like, Stone Cold was the biggest thing is he always hated Vince. But there was
honestly,
a time where he
joined. That felt like a side quest because it seemed pointless.
Yeah, it seemed pointless. It just didn't fit who Stone Cold was, and they changed it. But nothing will ever top the turn of Hogan because you're never gonna have that giant face like that again to just turn. This is not gonna happen.
Yeah,
you have it right now. You got Roman Reigns.
He's not a face.
Yeah, no.
He's kind of like an anti-hero because you got people that love him, people that hate him, and
I would say more people hate him than love him. But yes, there are a lot of people that like him. I was one who said I don't like Roman Reigns. I think he's better as a villain for sure. But I still don't like him.
Is Roman Reigns the LeBron of WWE?
No.
No.
The fact that can we talk about something for a second? We were just talking about Mount Rushmore. Freaking John Cena put Roman Reigns on Mount Rushmore.
Yeah.
I just lost all respect for
John Cena. He's about to have the longest title run ever.
I don't. That's because it's BS. There's nobody else in there. They should have taken that multiple times.
I think he's been holding the business down. Come on, you got to give this bloodline.
15 title defenses in a year? Yeah.
You got to give this bloodline story. The fact that it's still coming into WrestleMania with this much heat and interest, that's pretty good.
It only is because of The Rock and what he brought to it.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're finding ways to keep it fresh and dynamic. And
how's it going to end? It's not going to be a surprise.
Well, the I mean,
okay.
The next step is
tell me now, how's it going to end?
Cody's going to finish his story. That's been the whole. They made the video game is literally Cody Rhodes finish your story that they're releasing.
Right. But what if he doesn't?
Then it would be a great surprised? It would be a great twist. Yes, but I don't see them doing that.
That means they would have
screwed Cody twice, and then try to screw him again with The Rock trying to take the spot. Because I think that was a legit. They were going to do that. Until they got the fan backlash. And then now we're in scramble mode. We got to fix this.
Well,
it was legit going to be that. I truly think that's what it was. And then they're like, oh, The Rock's going to be over, all that kind of stuff. And everybody's like, no, we've been waiting for Cody and you just screwed us.
Which, can we talk about why do people like Cody Rhodes so much? I don't even think he's that good.
It's just because of his dad, the American Dream, and then the storyline of that. His dad held the title. He wants to hold the title. To carry on the legacy.
I think it's more just Cody crybabies.
Well, that and then people are tired of the Roman Reigns. The thing is, you have a champion that doesn't wrestle. Like, that's probably the most frustrating thing for people. People hated when Brock Lesnar was champion. He only wrestled 3 times a year and people hated it. Roman Reigns is the same way. He doesn't wrestle for the title anymore. And then when he did, he cheats the win. So, like, it just people get tired of that. I think that's probably the biggest thing.
It sounds like you tired of it, Gear.
Well, I'm not a Roman Reigns fan.
You don't even watch wrestling.
I'm not a Roman Reigns fan. I just don't think he's – to me, he is Hogan, but a villain version. He can't wrestle. He gets beat up the whole match, but then somehow still wins.
He can wrestle. He's gotten better.
He has 3 moves.
Hey, well, speaking of moves, and earlier D's talking about overselling, I wanted to ask y'all, did y'all watch the AEW pay-per-view, or have y'all seen highlights?
I saw highlights.
Well, here's the thing. Did you watch the Ospreay and the...
Will Ospreay the best wrestler in the world right now? No.
Yeah, did you... So, I was watching some highlight clips of that, and, you know, everybody was calling that match of the year, easily match of the year candidate. And the clips they were showing are like these guys taking huge moves and then like jumping up and immediately hitting the other person with a big move. And to me, it's like, you're not selling these huge moves. How is this a good wrestling match?
Like, so I think what makes it good is the fluidity of the moves, not making errors.
Yeah, but it's just not believable that you're taking these big hits. To me, that's what makes it more. But like, you know, like I was watching, what was it? Oh yeah, the Bret Hart documentary where there's something about, like, you know, the whole match he would focus on somebody's leg. That way, when he puts his sharpshooter in, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, of course that person is dying in pain because he's been working on his leg the whole match. But when you don't sell these big moves and you pop up and do your own big move, it's like, to me, that's not storytelling. That's just doing moves for the sake of being fluid and doing moves.
But let's be real. Wrestling hasn't been the way it should be when it comes to moves in the last 10 to 15 years. The fact that people kick out of every finisher in the world every time, it just diminishes everything. So, and then the fact that the super kick is now a everyday move when it was a finisher. Like, things like this that have changed. And still, when Shawn Michaels delivers a super kick, it's a finisher. So, like, the wrestling is evolved, and then it's not for the better, because I don't think people should be kicking out of finishers. If a finisher is hit and they kick out, that's a once, maybe twice a year thing. That's not something that happens every match. Because when Roman Reigns hits a finisher, people kick out of it 5 times a match. If somebody hits it on Reigns, he kicks it out 4 times. That's not entertaining, because you don't, like, it's, there's no, like, okay, he's going to kick out, stuff like that. So it's like, it's already got ruined. And I think that's where you're not seeing as much selling on some guys in matches, because, like, hey, doesn't matter anymore because everybody kicks out of everything. So why don't we just not sell and we just keep doing it? And then we keep inflicting more and more punishment. And then that will be what finishes the match. Because, like, if you want to talk like Will Ospreay, Kenny Omega, one of their matches they had was probably one of the greatest matches of all time. They literally hit, they each have like 6 different finishers. They hit 5 of their 6 finishers each on each other. And then one of them had to hit 2 different finishers in a row to win. Like, it's like, but that's just this genre of wrestling nowadays. A finisher isn't a finisher, which is dumb, because then there shouldn't be finishers, because it obviously doesn't finish.
Well, the thing that screwed up finishers is the Royal Rumble, because the first thing that happens when you come in the Royal Rumble, that person hit you with their finisher and kind of clear out the ring. So I'm going to blame it on the Royal Rumble. So at the end of the day, it's a problem that we created ourselves from
other matches. Yes, WWE did. Yeah. There's a difference.
So I'm blaming it on WWE and the wrestling organization.
Also, have you ever thought about, so you know how you brought up Hogan in the NWO turn? If you ever think about it, if Hogan doesn't turn NWO, we don't get the Attitude Era. Think about that. That was WWF's compliment to go against the NWO. And they had to, or else they would have got destroyed. And that's where we got the Attitude Era, one of the best era in WWE.
Yeah, that was good. That was good. I still didn't understand where the Wolfpack came from. Because they were doing just fine with just the NWO black and
white. It was just a way. Well, it wasn't like Hogan and them. It was a side off to try and disband the NWO.
But then that's just fighting amongst each other.
True.
Well, I think it was just interesting because they gave them a different colorway. But. Well, yes. I don't know. Y'all should go back and watch the highlights.
I'm gonna end up watching the pay-per-view at some point.
I think it's cool but I think it's almost become too much of a indie wrestling. That's what you see a lot in, like, you know, the sideshows is all the big spots, all the fluid little moves that make everybody excited, but it doesn't tell the story that I like when it comes to.
I think when it comes to, like, Will Ospreay, him and Kenny Omega, their whole stick is they are the most conditioned wrestlers there are. So they don't get tired in the ring, and they want to show that. And I think that's part of why they do what they do, especially when they go against each other, because they want to give you a 45-minute match that's nonstop action. Because you don't get that nowadays. You get so much, you get a 12-minute match, and then eight of it, they're laying around. And you get a couple spots here or there, and that's complete opposite of the mantra of like Kenny Omega and Will Ospreay. They want a high octane, high energy, keep the crowd in it for 40 minutes because they're both from New Japan. That's how New Japan is. New Japan's all about action, keep going nonstop because you want the crowd. And the crazy thing is, in New Japan, the fans never stand up until the match is over. They sit home, they sit down, they cheer. They never stand up because they don't want to disrespect the people behind them and not show them. It's outrageous.
Well,
have you been to Japan to watch a New Japan?
No, but I've watched the New Japan wrestling on TV.
I know, but that's got to be on your bucket list, right?
Oh, I would love to. I've been to Japan, but I haven't been to New Japan wrestling.
So, Gary, how is that going to work with the partnership with New Japan Wrestling and WWE? I don't know if you saw that they had signed, but I've always wondered, would you have cross-branding promotions like that? How do you handle the wins and losses of each athlete that goes up against each other?
Well, I think the problem has been when people come to WWE, they usually get beat from other promotions because they don't want to make WWE look inferior, and that's why partnerships usually don't last very long. That's just what I've seen. Like, usually if somebody comes over, it doesn't last very long because they just push them over. And then even wrestlers that come over that sign from other organizations, they come here and get squashed, and then they just get no longer have their character, and they leave to go somewhere else. Because, like, Swerve, for example. Swerve was supposed to be the next thing in NXT. They did him terrible. That's why he left again. Like, and he's back in AEW. Like, and he's doing great in AEW. Because you have more freedom.
Yeah.
Well, and I think New Japan's more of a respect thing. So I'm interested how it's going to work because all their wrestlers respect each other. It's not like the cutthroat like WWE is in the back. And because it's just a Japan culture. It's all a respect thing. It's about putting on a good show. It's not about who's the number one guy. That's different. WWE, it's all about I got to get the higher spot so I get more money. New Japan's like, hey, we're going to make money, but we need to put on a good show.
Gary, how much are they paying people in New Japan Wrestling, man?
There's some guys that are getting some good money.
I was like, so they got to be some good money because they're putting out a lot of athletes in the WWE and AEW.
New Japan, they have a lot of the most technical wrestling. They have some of the best. That's where Daniel Bryan came from. Some of the best technical wrestlers came from New Japan because they honed their craft there. And that's why you'll see a lot of Japanese wrestlers come to other organizations here because they're already well-rounded and ready for that big stage. As you saw Asuka when she came over, Shinsuke Nakamura, when he came over, they were thrust into the spotlight because they were prepared. Now you see differently with Jade. She comes over from AEW. They're moving her along slowly. They're not trying to – I don't think they don't think she's ready, I guess, even though she was doing well at AEW, but maybe not to WWE standards as they want her to be. But also – they want to build her until she can be the next thing, I guess. They want it to be a big moment.
That's Titus O'Neil, man, in female version. I told you.
Ooh, yep. That's ooh.
I wouldn't say that's a positive because that's a mid-carder, low-card.
Right, that's what I'm saying. But that feels like a slap.
No, it's not a slap. I'm talking about just the stiffness, not the fluidness of just the, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, when you see a fluid athlete, you just like, dang, man, he just big and athletic. You seem like you say, yeah, he big, he athletic, but she's like, he's a little stiff around the edges.
Well, I think we got that wrestling talk out of the way, and I know the people come here to listen to y'all talk football, so I saw something that I wanted to get y'all's take on. Two things. First off, did you guys see the compensation package for college athletes that opt in to be used? What did y'all think about that? $600 and a copy of the game. Y'all think that's fair?
It's fine for me. I would have loved to have $600 in the game when I was there.
Yeah, but we're not living under the same rules that you played under, Gary.
Again, sir, I would never have been entitled to NIL money, so I would have been completely content with it.
Right, right.
Oh, yeah, you had NIL money, Gary. You were big enough to have NIL money.
Until my senior year.
I did. You got NIL money. Got it.
That's when so, I would have if I had a possibility.
What I'm saying, though, Gary, is you would have got some NIL money earlier than that.
I was a two-star recruit.
You was at Loserville, man. Y'all was winning. Y'all were ranked in like the top five your junior year, right?
Yeah, I was a starter for my sophomore through senior year. Yes, but
yeah, you started,
but I didn't have a lot of numbers because we ran the ball a lot.
Yeah, I know that's all you did was block. You was a blocking tight end
until my senior year. First time I was given the opportunity to truly catch the ball a lot.
Man, you had probably the eighth and ninth best hands on the team.
I did have my first career touchdown against Memphis, though.
Is that when you and D'Angelo became friends?
That's when he basically handed the game away to us.
Oh. I did not. I'm not going to go with that right now.
But no, if you want to talk about, like, do I think the player should opt in? Yes. Because whether you like it or not, your name's going to be in there in some way. I know they said that they're going to say, oh, we're not going to let you put that exact spelling in or whatever. Like Arch Manning, he opted out. His excuse was the stupidest excuse I've ever heard. But his excuse, I want to focus on the field. You shouldn't have said that. That should have just been like, hey, I'm not getting paid enough. That's all you had to say. It don't matter. But
yeah.
His name's Arch Manning. People are just going to name Art Man. You know who it is. Like, it ain't going to matter. You're still going to end up in the game, and you're just not getting compensated for it now. It's just stupid to me. I had a problem with it going away a long time ago when they got sued, because the simple fix of college football, the game could have been here for the last 10 years. It was just stupid of EA. All you have to do is make it all randomized players. Doesn't matter what their skin color was, the jersey, height, weight. Put randomize on every team and let the community edit the rosters. You can't control what the community does. The community would have named every player because they were already doing that before. And then now you don't have to worry about likeness because you didn't make them the likeness. You just randomly generated every player. And you would have never had any issues. You could have keep making the game, could have done all this stuff, but they were dumb. And they made players look alike. Don't do that. Let the community do it. The community will do it for you if you give them the opportunity, because that's how big that game was for people.
Damn, dude.
I waited 2 weeks for a roster to get done before I started playing the game. I didn't like playing with the names, the numbers. So I waited 2 weeks, and then a roster would be put out. I'd download it, and now I had all the names on there, and I'd play the game.
And we could tell that you pissed off about the process that you had to go through to even get it to work the way that you had to work, just based off how you're talking about it.
No, I was fine waiting. I just think it was dumb that we lost a great game for 10 years because EA was just cheap. That's all.
Well, we'll see what kind of compensation package they got other than that $600 in your name. Like,
I think if it's back when y'all were playing, it would have been fair. But nowadays, whenever you got these kids making millions of dollars, good luck.
Well, again, then don't we? There's already 10,000 that have opted in out of the 11,000. So there's only 1,000 that hasn't opted in. That's fine. Those names are still going to get put in the game by the community, and you're still going to be in the game. It ain't going to matter. You just lost out on $600, and now you have to buy the game.
And you got to buy the game.
Yeah, like
or borrow your teammates' copy.
Yeah, like it just. I don't know. I understand that, hey, you could get more money, but they're not going to – like, they can't give you more money because they got to pay 11,000 players.
Mm-hmm.
Like, D, do you remember what we got from Madden?
I can't remember.
I think it was like $7,000, right? Maybe?
Yeah.
Something like that. We got like maybe like seven – yeah, each year that we were in Madden, you got like $7,000. Like, that wasn't –
I'm trying to think.
$7,000.
$600.
But you also have 30 teams and you have 53 players on the team. It's a lot different than 120 teams and 80 players a team. A lot less players. 300 players-ish?
Yeah.
Whatever it was.
I get that.
So yeah, you can pay more if you have less players.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
And we were in NFL. Like, it's different than college.
The no fun league.
I disagree.
Well, you know, NFL this week, they had the combine going on. I just kind of wanted me to take you guys back. Were you guys at the combine? If you were, what was your favorite memory of the combine, and what was your least favorite thing about the combine?
Well, I guess I'd say my favorite part of the combine was it being over.
Yes.
My least favorite part of the combine was taking that New York Giants test. It took forever. It was like a aptitude test. Oh, bro, it took forever. That sucked. But yeah, for the most part, it was cool.
I think for me, it was terrible being at. Like, it's just a very, hey, go here, go there, do this, do that type of stuff. The positive was, hey, I finished, I think, top three in every event for the tight ends. And so I did what I expected to do and showed people that
I was tight ends were in your, what tight ends were in your draft class, Gary?
I couldn't even tell you. Only one I know for a fact was Jacob Tammy, because he went to Kentucky and he got drafted by Indianapolis. That's the only thing only tight end that I remember. Maybe Martellus Bennett. Maybe Martellus Bennett.
What year did you get drafted?
08. Maybe Martellus Bennett, Texas A&M. I don't remember, though.
Dee, what about you? What other running backs were in your draft class?
Joseph Addai, Reggie Bush, Maurice Jones-Drew, who else? What is his name? Played with the Minnesota Gophers. I can see him. I just can't think of his name. Had dreads.
The dreadlocks.
Yeah.
Who was that?
So mine were Fred Davis, Dustin Keller, Martin Rucker, Martellus Bennett, John Carlson, Kellen Davis, Jacob Tammy, Brad Cottom, Jermichael Finley. I was number 10.
Wow. Yeah, so you ended up being the best tight end out of your draft class, I'd say, right? Maybe Martellus Bennett.
I would say Martellus Bennett. Fred Davis had a good career.
Oh, yeah.
That might have been it, really. It's funny because I actually played with Kellen Davis in Cleveland. He came to Cleveland and was in my – I think Cleveland, or I don't know. Yeah, I think it was Cleveland. I think he was my backup.
Mm. Wow.
Jermichael Finley had the chance to be the best tight end in that class, but he got concussions and had to retire early. He was with Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay.
Okay.
He had the ability. He was putting up numbers, and he was probably going to be the best in that class, but he got a concussion, and he had to retire early. Probably Martellus Bennett was probably the best in the class, him or Fred Davis. Stats wise, but I want to switch gears away from football for a second. Well
Maroney, no more football. Maroney was the running back we're thinking
about. Lawrence Maroney is who I was talking about.
So, actually, I got one more football. How bad of a trade was that Seattle Denver trade by Denver that they're cutting? They cut Russell Wilson. That's got to go down as the worst trade in history. Right? That's got to be worse than the Ricky Williams trade.
That's not worse than the Panthers trade.
That is definitely worse than the Panthers trade.
I don't know.
Hey, Gary, I'm surprised that they like they're one of those organizations that say, hey, you know what? We screwed up and cut him.
Yeah, because he's getting paid. Now, don't get me wrong. It'd be very dumb of him to sign with another team. Because he's guaranteed $38 million if he sits at home. If he signs with another team, he don't get that $38 million. He gets whatever that new contract is. Which teams are saying he would be great as an asset on league minimum. You don't play this year. If you don't play, and then you just go ahead and ride off in the sunset and get paid for the next 2 years. Because he's due 38 and I think he's due 40. But if he signs a new contract, he gets none of that. That wipes it out.
Damn.
We know what you're doing, Gary. You're
I'm riding off
it,
in the
you?
Sunset.
Yeah, you're at home with it.
I put that to theory and I did it. So yes, I will do that.
Dean, what about you? What you doing?
I'm riding off in the damn sunset. We play this game for money, man. You know,
he has nothing to prove. He's already won a Super Bowl. He's got nothing to prove. Dude, he already is going down as a terrible quarterback, overrated after a few years. So like,
wow. But I think he does have something to prove. If he needs to come back and show that.
So are you going to continue playing? Or are you riding out with that 38 mil?
Oh no, I'm playing.
No, you're a fucking liar. And I just dropped the F.
I was saying, dang, Gary, I never heard that.
To end this podcast. Thank you guys for joining the Cinnamon and Sugar podcast. Gary just sent us out with a bang.
Right? Bang. Wow. We out. We're fucking out.
You are now listening to the Cinnamon and Sugar Podcast featuring D'Angelo Williams and Gary Barnage. You are now listening to the Cinnamon and Sugar Podcast featuring D'Angelo Williams and Gary Barnage. You are now listening to the Cinnamon and Sugar Podcast featuring D'Angelo Williams and Gary Barnage. You are now listening to the Cinnamon and Sugar Podcast featuring D'Angelo Williams and Gary Barnage.